Hello, everybody. This is Luke Stamey with the Space Travel Podcast. I hope everybody's doing awesome today. It's kind of a dreary, chilly day here in Louisiana, so we're just kind of hanging out, and I figured I would record a little episode just kind of covering a few things that I believe they're spoken about and they're talked about, but probably not as much as they should be. We've got, as everybody knows, a lot of small launch companies that are, I don't want to say springing up, because some of them have been around for a little while now, but they are gaining popularity, should I say. A few of these, just for example, would be Astra, and we'll talk about them in more detail in a minute. Rocket Lab's pretty big in the news these days. A lot of content out there on Rocket Labs. I love them. They're such a great company. But we're also talking about like Firefly, and then there's a bunch of European companies that I really can't remember the names of right now, so we're not going to cover them so much. But I've had a bunch of requests recently to do an episode on Astra. You know, just because they've been trying to launch their rockets recently. It was 1.0 and 2.0 they've already launched. And though everyone considers them a failure, Astra came out and, you know, considered them a success and just said that the flight was not quite as long as they thought it was going to be. Which, you know, it's one of those things that failure is success in progress, you know? So they're doing the same kind of thing that SpaceX is doing, that rapid iterative prototyping, you know, just not quite to the scale that SpaceX is doing it at. It's just, you know, a little bit smaller, but Astra seems to be a pretty cool company. They are based in Alameda, California, and they were incorporated in October of 2016 by Chris Kemp and Adam London. Incorporated, I guess, would just mean put together and whatnot. They've had two suborbital test flights, as I said. They have a launch complex, and it is called the Pacific Spaceport Complex, Alaska. So they launch from Alaska, which personally I think is really cool because, I mean, rocket engine exhaust is extremely hot. We all know that. And then we got people like John Krause, who seems to be the photographer for Astra and all their launch attempts, which props to you, Mr. John Krause. You take awesome photos. We appreciate you. And some of those photos, especially there where the air temperature is much lower, it's just, you can see like the atmospheric heating from the exhaust. It's just really cool. Makes for great photography. And, you know, after their last launch, they came out with that, not Astra themselves, but a person posted a video. It looked like a cell phone video of the flight, and, I mean, everything looked good up until the point where the engine shut off and it just kind of fell back down to the ground, which I was a little amazed that they didn't have some kind of abort system or, you know, some way to blow it out of the air before it hit the ground, but maybe there's a reason for that. I'm not quite sure. They were contenders in the DARPA Launch Challenge. So this launch challenge was essentially a competition where a bunch of small aerospace companies were going to develop a launch vehicle that would be able to be rapidly set up and launched. And I think some of the requirements were it has to fit inside of a certain container. So Astra's rocket fits inside of a regular shipping container. So like I think they're 53 feet by, you know, it's rather small. They're not huge. So it's a small launch vehicle, but that doesn't take away from its power and performance, which I think is very cool. But anyway, come to find out, something happened. The competition went on a good while, and all the other contenders pretty much dropped out. And Astra was the only one left as far as anyone competing for the money, because that's what they were, you know, looking for, was so you were going to win money. And it's, I I think it was $12 million or something like that. So that's what they were trying to get. So they didn't actually get to claim the prize because they didn't get to launch for various reasons. But in my opinion, I think they should have got it. I really do. I think there should have been some exception made and allowed to launch. That would have been good for their company, for sure. But for the morale of the team within the company, I think that would have been paramount as well. So we were supposed to have the Astra launch yesterday. So the launch window is from the 11th to the 18th of December. But they posted a press kit, which is what I'm going to use right now. So no copyright, nothing. I'll be reading their press kit that they released, or just, you know, referencing it so that we can get some of the details, you know, about this stuff. It's really cool. So the launch opportunities are 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Kodiak, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific, 6 to 9 p.m. UTC. I believe that those are all the days of the window those are the times for each day. Now, we're on the second day today. They already scrubbed it today. They pushed it again, I think, for tomorrow. So hopefully things will clear up. I think they said something about high wind shear. So hopefully those things can clear up and we can see a gorgeous orbital launch from their 3.0, I believe. But they are launching from LP-3B at that Pacific Spaceport complex. The target orbit is going to be with an inclination of 98.1 degrees and an altitude of 380 kilometers. I hope they can achieve it. The rocket, I'm looking at a picture of it right now. It's very pretty and very cool. I dig it. It's kind of, you know, Firefly has the same thing and Electron has the same thing. They're all very uniquely looking and special launch vehicles, which is awesome. There's not going to be any kind of payload on board of this Astra launch. It's only going to have instrumentation and sensors and stuff like that to be able to send data back, you know, so they can do that research and everything and make 4.0, you know, even better than 3.0. The primary objectives for the flight, and I like how they did this as a company because it just doesn't put a lot of stress on anybody. I mean, don't get me wrong, they're stressed. They want this thing to fly to space, but they say their primary objective is to make progress over the last flight, make it one step closer to reaching orbit. So it's kind of like this last Starship launch. They're not saying, hey, we're going to launch this Starship and we're going to fly it up and then we're going to land it back on the ground. They're saying, you know, we'll be happy if it makes it past where it did last time. And that's always a good goal, you know, just one step further than where you were last time, I think, is a perfect place to start. But Kodiak, Alaska is absolutely beautiful. I mean, just like I said, John Krause took a whole bunch of images in there. They're beautiful. I'm going to go over a little bit of the mission timeline for when they do launch. That way you guys will have a little bit of an idea of what to look forward to. So at T plus 3 seconds, they're going to have liftoff. T plus 38 is their gravity turn maneuver. T plus 57 will be reaching maximum aerodynamic pressure. And then T plus 2 minutes and 22 seconds, there's a big, big jump right there, they'll have main engine cutoff. And then T plus 2 minutes and 25 seconds, fairing separation. 2 minutes 29 seconds, stage separation. And then I have a little bit of trouble pronouncing the name of this engine, but at T plus 2 minutes and 33 seconds, they have the Aether ignition, I think it's how you say it. But that is their second stage engine. That's the one that will propel the second stage up into its desired orbit. After that ignition at T plus 8 minutes and 32 seconds, we'll see second engine cutoff. And then T plus 8 minutes and 35 seconds should be payload deployment. So, and I think this press thing right here, if you just go to their Twitter page, they posted a link for it. And you can go look through it and check it out. But they claim that their system is the world's most responsive and affordable launch system. That is up for debate, in my opinion. you know, but I'm not an expert on the economics of rocket launches, how much they cost, you know, per kilogram and all that. I got a general knowledge of it, but that's not my forte per se. So it's 3.2. So rocket 3.2 is an expendable, vertically launched, two-stage LOX kerosene rocket. So it's a, you know, to me, that's what I would call a classic liquid-fueled rocket. And it was designed to fit in those 53-foot shipping containers. And that is to lower the cost of access to space because, I mean, think about it. If you have rockets that are pre-made, you know, you have a warehouse with rockets in it, and they're all in shipping containers that are designed to hold these rockets. You want to launch one from the Cape? I mean, you just get that container to the Cape and launch it, you know, or what have you. It makes the logistics of everything much easier, and in turn, making everything faster. Eschewing labor-intensive processes such as carbon composite layups, Astra has focused on proven and cost-efficient metallic structures, which is pretty neat. It consists of a first stage powered by 5 of their Delphine electric pump-fed engines, kind of like the Rocket Labs, and an upper stage propelled by the single pressure-fed Aether engine. I hope I'm saying that right. It's just one of those words that it's simple, but it, you know, could be said certain ways. So as I said, Delphine and Aether engines, there's 5 of the Delphine, 1 of the Aether. The thrust per engine, when we're talking about the Delphines themselves, is about 6,500 foot-pounds at sea level. And the Aether is about 665 foot-pounds in a vacuum. Total thrust altogether from all the rockets or all the engines on the rocket itself is 32,500 foot-pounds at sea level, and that's for the Delphine motors. And the Aether engine is still sitting at about 665 foot-pounds in vacuum, since there's only one of them on there. The overall length, now this is what's going to get you, because if you look at the rocket itself, it looks kind of like the Electron sitting on the pad. You know, it's not a gigantic rocket, but it's not small either. This rocket is 38 feet long. 38 feet. I mean, that's honestly, like, we have a house that's got a dining room and living room that's kind of all one room. This rocket could fit laying down inside of these two rooms. I think that's amazing. It's got a diameter of 52 inches, which, I mean, that's pretty, you know, that's pretty big, but it's not gigantic by any means. It's just gorgeous. They got this really pretty kind of slated fairing section on top that makes it have this unique look. And they did post at the bottom of this press packet that they put out is a image of what looks to be maybe Jupiter and Saturn. Right, like you see the rocket coming in the middle and you got Jupiter and Saturn on both sides. It's very cool. But so hopefully everybody, cross your fingers, will get another chance to watch their launch tomorrow. And that's a little bit about Astra, the aerospace company. You know, I probably left a few things out. If you guys want to hear anything more about Astra, or if I missed a topic about them, just let me know. Hit me up on Twitter at LukeStamey20 is my personal account, or you can hit me up on the podcast account, which is at Space Travel Pod. I'd be happy to talk with y'all. I've been recently enjoying chatting with a bunch of my fellow space nerds on Twitter, you know, and just discussing topics and stuff like that, which is very cool. So shout out to all you guys. I want to go ahead and switch gears real quick. And we were talking about the big or the small, and I kind of want to swap over and talk about the big real quick, because it's a topic that everybody in the world is talking about right now. But yes, SN9 has had a little bit of a support issue. So SN9 was sitting in the high bay at Boca Chica, Texas, preparing itself to be moved out to the pad for its launch attempt, or, you know, attempt at flight. And all of a sudden, it just kind of fell over. Not all the way over. Luckily, it was inside of a very well-built building, but it fell over nonetheless. So we had some supports underneath the rocket on that stand that they move them around with, most likely give way, and it tilted the entire rocket to the side and leaned it against the inside walls of the building, kind of like right in the corner, which was lucky if you ask me, because, you know, it minimized the amount of surface area that was touching the actual structure itself. To me personally, from all the different angles and videos that I've seen, it doesn't seem to have done a lot of damage. Now, I haven't seen the bottom area, you know, like where the support actually gave out and all that. So, it, you know, there could be some damage down there, but I'm not expecting anything huge. But we'll see. Now, if you want to watch it fall over or tip over, go hit up Atlab Padre. He caught it on video with his 24-hour cam. It's pretty interesting to watch, even though this machine is, like, you know, gigantic, like tons and tons and tons and tons and tons. It just kind of like, bloop, just kind of fell over, and I just am amazed at the structural integrity of those buildings. They look like tents, you know, I mean, they just really don't look to be much more than like a glorified tent, but it definitely can hold up a tipped starship. So props to those craftsmen who built that building. It's very impressive. And, you know, I know all my fellow space nerds feel the same way, but I am still in awe. I was talking with my brother the other day about the Starship launch and how well it went and how amazing the technology is. It's just one of those things that is, it's out of this world for me. All right, we'll move on, and I just kind of want to quickly touch on a few headlines, you know, that I've seen here and there. I'm not really going to go into huge detail, just kind of want to keep you guys up to date on what's going on. So the SLS, as far as it goes, they are testing the tanks right now at Stennis Space Center, which is actually really close to me. It's just in Mississippi. I'm in Louisiana, so you just cross over the over the Mississippi border, and it's on your right-hand side. They've got a first stage of a Saturn V booster sitting right out in front of the place. It's pretty cool, and they do a lot of rocket engine testing there. It's just a lot. But they do also these pressure tests and, you know, anything else that's needed as well. But they're working on colder locks for the next green run wet dress rehearsal attempt. So that's what we'll be looking forward to as far as SLS goes. I was sitting here trying to see if Astra happened to put a reason for scrubbing their flight today, because I know yesterday it was high wind shear. It was the upper level wind shear and triggered lightning risks caused the teams to stand down. So that's the reason for that. Let me see if I wrote anything else in my notes here. China, they launched their Long March 11, lofts a GE CAM mission. That rocket is pretty cool. I enjoy it. I enjoy watching it fly. I just think those foreign rockets are very neat. Well, I don't really have much left in my notes as far as big headlines. If you guys want to hear a little episode like this about another topic or something specific, hit me up. And as always, if you guys want to support the podcast, you can head over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/spacetravel, or you can go to my Anchor page, which is anchor.fm/spacetravel, and hit the support button on there. And as always, hit me up on Twitter, all that good jazz. I'd love to talk to y'all. We appreciate your support and listenership. It means a lot to us. This is a hobby for us, you know. We don't do this to make money or anything. This is just a passion of ours. So we really do appreciate you guys. And you guys have a day. This is Luke Stamey with the Space Travel Podcast, signing off.